Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay with the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is our hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-host is Misty Hall, and I discuss the issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So, good evening, Misty. How are you?
Good evening, Bonnie. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good. We just want to give people our call-in number, because if you'd like to discuss any of the issues that we'll be discussing tonight or have any of your own issues that you would like to discuss with us, please feel free to join in, and our number here is area code 646-716-4893. I'll repeat that one more time. It's area code 646-716-4893. And I want to welcome all of our listeners. Just a couple of announcements that I would like to make before we begin our show, that I'm really excited about my upcoming trip to Houston. And we have a number of women who have already signed up for this. This is going to be our Houston retreat, and it's going to be the weekend of March 3rd and 4th in Houston, Texas. And I think we're going to have really a dynamite lineup of women attending this conference. And I'm really excited. We're going to have Patsy Ray Dawson with us, and Deborah Thomas Brown from Florida will be there, and Wendy from Wendy's List will be there, and some other really dynamic women that I've, you know, had contact with through the years and have been at other conferences as well, some of them, and some new women as well from the Texas area. So you don't have to be from Texas to come to this. You can be from anywhere. We have people coming in from Florida, from really all over. So if you're interested, you can email me at bonk@aol.com. I think what's really interesting and what's going to be a little bit different about this particular get-together is that there will be an emphasis on Christianity, because Patsy Ray Dawson is a counselor for Christian women. And also Deborah Thomas Brown, she's a very big worker with Christian women also with her counseling. You know, her counseling is for minority women and women from the Caribbean. But they both have a strong Christian background, and they're going to still be the ones to tell you that these marriages don't work. And Patsy Ray will also talk to you about biblically and, you know, why it's okay to leave these marriages, because Misty, you know this much more so than I do. So many of our Christian women really struggle with leaving their marriages, and you could speak on that much better than I can.
Yes, I mean, it's something I've spoke about numerous times on here for myself. You know, when you're of the Christian faith, most of those marriages, you know, most of those faiths, religions, they consider marriage sacred. It's something that, you know, you make a promise to God with, and it's very serious. It's not just something to take lightly. Usually it's considered to be for life. And, you know, when you enter into marriage, it's just very sacred as a Christian. It's very honored. It's very something that you plan on to be in until death do you part. Those are even in the vows. So it's just very interesting when it comes to something such as this. There's so few places to turn to when you are straight and married to a gay husband. It's not like many religions address this. And the ones that do address it, and I'm by certainly no means bashing religion whatsoever, I'm just going through some of the experiences of myself and some of the women I've worked with. When some of the religions do address it, or they go to their specific church congregation and someone there addresses it for them, usually sexuality is considered a choice. So not only do you have a failure, feel like a failure, you've got even more of a burden put upon you, because you're feeling like you're someone that has contributed to your husband being gay, because supposedly through a lot of these different religions, he has a choice to be gay or straight. So it's just a horrible, horrible road to walk down. It's just so much heartache. I mean, a tremendous amount of heartache to walk down when you look at that version and that view. Now, with that being said, not all are like that, not all at all. So, you know, really what I did to get through mine, I had to develop my own relationship with God. I couldn't depend on others or religion or, matter of fact, the church I grew up in to tell me how to go about it, because it was just something, I would still be there today, you know, taking the abuse, accepting the adultery, which
was very hard. But you grew up in a church, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in your particular denomination, did they discuss homosexuality at all?
No, no, not at all. And not when I was growing up. Now times are different. They may now. But it was when they did discuss anything such as that. Well, I mean, it was be discussed a few times. I mean, not much. But it was considered a choice, and it was sinful. That would send you to hell.
Uh-huh.
When it was discussed, it was completely discussed as sinful. It was a choice. It would send you to hell.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, why make that choice?
Did you know many people growing up who were gay or not?
Not really. I mean, I say this, and I'm serious when I say this. A lot of people laugh when I say it. I grew up on, of course, on TV, and one of my favorite shows was Bewitched. And Uncle Arthur, I knew something was a little strange about Uncle Arthur on Bewitched. I just didn't know quite what was strange about Uncle Arthur. Well, you know, he, what was his name? Was it Paul Lynde? Was that his name?
Which
I'm sure he was gay. That was probably
my first exposure. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was probably my only exposure. Now, I'm sure there were gay people around me. I'm sure there were gay people in my friends, family. I didn't know. You know,
When you were in school, did people accuse other people of being gay to make fun of them? Or?
Yes, people would call, and I can't stand this word, but I'll say it. People would call, mostly guys, faggots. That would be the word they would choose to call. So there was a lot of bullying going on like that. And now looking back, some of them were gay, and I can't imagine what they went through. And today I'm really good friends with a guy. We laugh. He says he's my first boyfriend. We probably, I'm going to put this in quotation marks, dated, was boyfriend and girlfriend like second or third grade, because on a break he said, "Will you be my girlfriend?" And I said, "Yes." And, you know, that was what it was all about. And anyway, and he's gay. He's openly gay today. But he is just, he's just a wonderful person. And I know he was bullied a lot through school, you know, through high school, which is, it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. And it's a shame that that happens, but it does. It does. And, but during the time in high school, did I know he was gay? No, I didn't really think about it. I didn't define, growing up, I didn't define people as gay or straight. It was just who they are. You know what I'm saying? I didn't say, okay, well, they're gay, they're straight, they're gay. I didn't do that. And I mean, I grew up in Eastern Kentucky where homosexuality is not looked upon too much. You know, I mean, you can really have some brutal attacks, especially verbal attacks, being called names, outcast, and everything. But going to school, I remember in high school that some people were teased, called the F word, and I didn't like it. I thought it was mean, but I didn't think much about it. I thought, well, they're just not as, you know, boyish as the other boys. I didn't think anything about it, because now remember, some of these guys were dating other girls,
mm-hmm.
and I, in my little world, why would you date a girl if you were gay?
Mm-hmm.
So that didn't, you know, well, they wouldn't be gay if they were dating another girl. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I didn't think much about it.
Yeah, I didn't either. And it's really funny because when I was in high school, I really liked this guy. And his name was Richard Cohen. And it's always a really interesting story, I think. So I'll tell it to you.
Okay.
Richard and I were a year apart in high school, so I was like in 11th grade, he was in 10th grade. He was always a year behind me. And, you know, I'm going back to the 1960s when life was really a lot different. And, you know, everybody was fighting for everything and revolutions, including sexual revolution was, you know, full swing. And, you know, I grew up and I was kind of a little naive, I guess, about certain things, but, not, you know, not everything. And I was very promiscuous when I was younger because of my low self-esteem. So, you know, I'm certainly knowledgeable about sex, but not so much about sexuality. I'll put it to you that way. So I, you know, really loved Richard. He was a great guy. And I think I was in probably 12th grade. He was in 11th grade. And one night, you know, we were, you know, just best friends, but we were drinking some wine. And I guess we got a little tipsy and we decided we're going to try something sexually. And it never quite happened. You know, we tried, but, you know, it wasn't working on his end. So that was okay. We were kind of drunk, and the next day we just laughed it off. And then at one other time, we kind of, you know, we tried it one more time. We were in New York, and, you know, we went to stay overnight in New York. And once again, had some drinks. I think I was 19 by then because he was 18, and they were serving drinks at 18 in New York. And, you know, it was a matter that we tried it again. Now, Richard was so popular when he was in high school. There were so many girls who were jealous of me. Not that he was dating me, but they knew that I was his best friend, and they thought if they would befriend me, then I would be able to somehow hook them up with him. And so, you know, I had a lot of these hanger-on or groupie girls. I mean, he was, like, the most popular guy in high school. So, you know, gay would never have come into it because he was dating so many girls. He had girlfriends, you know, beautiful girls. And what was really interesting was that later in life, you know, when we moved on, I moved out to California for a while. He went to college, and I heard from him when I moved back to Philadelphia. I was probably around, you know, 20 when I heard from him again. And he said, oh, I'm so excited that you're back here, because we kept in touch. And he said, I really want to get together with you when I come home from college, because I have something to tell you. And I said, okay, great. So when he came home and he said, well, I don't know how to tell you this, but, you know, I'm gay. And I said, you're what? You know, he said, I'm gay. I said, well, how is that possible that you're gay? I said, you know, you had a million girls around you all the time and you were dating them. He said, I'm telling you, I'm gay. He said, you know, I was in college. I came to terms with it. I went to an advisor there. They have a gay group on campus. And he said, I talked to them, and they helped me come to terms with the fact, you know, I always knew I was different, and this is what I am. But once again, not having any conception in my own head that guys who were, you know, dating all these girls, you know, I had the stereotypical image, like I guess you did, of the flamboyant Paul Lynde type of gay guy. You know, that I thought that's what gay was, not some guy who's sitting out there dating women and who's so popular with the women. I mean, he had no problems getting women. So, you know, for that reason, it was like something that was very foreign to me. Now, the interesting thing with the Richard Cohen story was this. You know, we went along our ways. You know, he went back to college, and, you know, I went on my way, and life went on, and I kind of lost track of him. And I wrote about this in my book, my first book, you know, the story about, is he, you know, gay husband checklist for women who wonder. You know, several years later, we met up again in New York. And I was living in New York at that time, and he was living in New York also. And I must have been about 26, because I was just getting ready to get married, in fact, to my gay husband. And he was 25, and we're walking down the street, and we're, like, right on the same block as Macy's. And, like, I pass him, he passes me, and we turn around, and all of a sudden, with that instant recognition, go running to each other, hugging each other. And I said to him, I can't believe that I just saw you here. I said, you know, I had no idea you were living in New York. So he said to me, well, I knew you were in New York, because I was involved with some, you know, political activities at that time of my life. And he was involved in a cult group going back to the 1970s. It was called the Moonies, or Reverend Moon. I don't know if you ever heard of them, Misty, because it was before your time.
I've heard
but
of them.
He was like a religious cult leader from Korea, and he had recruited all these people in the United States, you know, from good families, wealthy families, you know, nice kids, college-educated kids. And they did, like, extreme brainwashing of them 24 hours a day. They had them selling flowers on the street, you know, flowers at the airport. You know, everything revolved around raising money for Reverend Moon. And it was really a scary movement. But anyway, he told me in that conversation that he had gotten married. And I said, you've gotten married? I said, well, how did that happen? You were gay. He said, well, after I met Reverend Moon, I was no longer gay. He made me realize that, you know, I had a choice in this stuff. And, you know, I'm no longer gay. He said, I'm straight now. I have a wife. So I thought that was, like, really kind of bizarre, even though I wasn't really involved in the gay arena, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't know that much, but I thought, well, I guess people can change. You know, what did I know back then? You know, in the mid-1970s. So the funny part was that around 1992, I'm watching television one night, and I used to watch 60 Minutes all the time, and I see an advertisement, you know, on 60 Minutes for their Sunday segment about how men can change, homosexual men can change. And sure enough, there was a picture of Richard Cohen and his Korean wife and their two children. And, you know, he got on television and he explained that, yes, you know, through his church, he didn't say the name of it because people would have known it was a cult and not a church, that he was able to change and, you know, get married and have this wonderful family. And he was now a therapist, and he was doing therapy with men so that they wouldn't have to be gay. This was his new job. He was a licensed therapist, and his theory was that, you know, if men are gay, it's because they had bad relationships with their fathers, so they're looking for father figures, and this is how they become gay. Well, that sure didn't make a lot of sense to me. And, you know, in future years, he was exposed in different ways, and he lost his licensing. But they did shows on, trying to think, you know, on several of the comedy, you know, commentary comedy shows, like on the Comedy Channel. And Jon Stewart did a whole big expose on him, you know, a few years ago. And as a result of it, you know, he really did lose his, you know, licensing. But he's still out there trying to get men to convert. But my point is this, I mean, what did we all know about gay back then? Very little. And like you said, why would we think that a guy who, you know, is dating women and is popular with women, why would he be with women if he were gay? I mean, like, the two didn't equate for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two and two wasn't equaling four there. And it, I just didn't comprehend that. So did you have some of that same problem?
Absolutely. And I thought it was... And another thing, you know, it was one of those things, oh, well, you only see that stuff on TV. You know, you don't know people like that, or, you know, you don't see that around where you live, so to speak, because all the guys I knew, they were pretty much dating girls. So why would that be? You know, so it's not something I gave a lot of thought to. And I just didn't think it was, I didn't think it existed very much in my world.
See, I was really stupid about gay. You know, I'm the first to admit it. I just didn't understand it. And
mm-hmm.
I think I had an experience when I was, you know, in my late teens, and I was living out in California. And that was, like I say, during those days where everything was really crazy. And, you know, the sex, the drugs, and rock and roll, everything you hear about it was absolutely true. And I was kind of living in the middle of it. And if you think we dance in a circle of crazy now, Mister, you should have seen that circle I was in back then. But anyway, the thing is that back then, you know, there was like a gay liberation movement in California, and I became very close with this gay guy, you know, who was around 2 years, you know, around my age or a year older. And I thought he was adorable, and I really fell for him. And I was I was 17 or 18 years old, and I thought, you know what, this guy just needs some woman to love him. That's why he's gay. And once he understands that, you know, a woman can love him, he can be straight. And that's how my thinking used to be. I used to really believe people had a choice.
Yeah.
And it came because he had a bad experience or, you know, they had a choice in being gay. And I think it's so confusing because even when I was in my 20s and before I married my gay husband, I was going with an old, you know, high school sweetheart, you know, that didn't work out back then, but we thought we'd try again. And when I first, you know, met up with him, I said to him, what have you been doing the last 6-7 years? And we talked about relationships that we had been in. I was just finishing up a marriage before my gay husband. And, you know, I said, how about you? Have you been in any other relationships? And he told me he had been in 4 relationships, 2 with men and 2 with women. And even then, it didn't sound that, you know, out of sorts with me because I knew that growing up in that sexual revolution, people would try anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, well, I tried it, you know, but it just wasn't me. It's not what I wanted. You know, I love, you know, I like to be around women. And it didn't, you know, it wasn't any kind of red flag for me. I mean, that's how naive I was back then. Mm-hmm. Like, well, you tried it, you didn't like it, now you know what you are, and so we're going to proceed.
Right. And, you know, when you're that young age will experiment with a lot of things, not just sex. They'll experiment sometimes with drugs. Hopefully they won't stay on them. They just experiment with different things of trying to figure out who they are. So,
do you think that's still today going on? I mean, I see it a lot with girls who think, you know, they can be bisexual. I don't know if they really are. They're just, you know, it's a trend. I do much with straight with guys, though, you know, who are identified as straight. I don't see them saying, well, let's try everything.
Right, right. I think you're right. I think in the girl population you may see it a little more. And of course, I have no research on this. I don't know. I'm just talking about from what I hear and what I see sometimes as a therapist. I think you're right. I think you may see that a little bit more fluid in the girls because, just quite frankly, it seems to be more accepted in our culture. You know, look at all the porn industry and stuff. When you look at that, you know, there are many females together. So I think it's a little more accepted and a little more even promoted by some guys, you know, to have two women at a time or to have two girls. So, you know, I don't know. It's just I'm sure people still experiment. It's just that age, I do think they experiment. But in terms of being gay, you know, I do think they know at an early age. I do think they know that. Now, whether or not they feel like they fit in or try to do things to fit in, I think that still holds true today, sad to say. But I think even if they are, like, for example, if a young boy or young girl knows that they're gay or lesbian, I think they will still try to fit in what would be considered the norm to date, you know, the opposite sex, to hide that. Especially with the bullying and teasing going on.
I've really never understood female sexuality like I do male sexuality, because to me it does seem it's more fluid, and I don't think it's because it's necessarily more socially acceptable. Maybe it is more fluid. I don't know. You know,
I don't know either. I'm with you on that. I mean, you know, I don't understand it. I know that from some of the, and this is a little bit research based, I won't quote it verbatim, but with some girls that have experienced trauma, they tend to be afraid of guys more if they're younger. But, you know, it all depends. You know, some girls say, no, that didn't scare me. I will still, you know, sometimes I still feel safe if it's the right person. And then some girls will say, no, I'll never be with another man because he beat me so much. You know, so it... I think women's sexuality and men's sexuality is just so different. I mean, you can't consider it opposite at all. I think it's very, very, and women are completely wired different than men.
I know, and I guess it's all a matter, once again, you know, when women come to me and they say, well, I'm sure my husband's bi, he's not gay. And it all comes down to, once again, definitions and what you consider to be gay. And we had a little bit of this conversation last week when we were talking about pansexual. And, you know, I guess I have a lot of women who come to me whose husbands are into transvestites and who are into, you know, transgender. They're into everything that you don't want to call necessarily gay. But it's like I tell women, to me, I don't care really what you call it. It's all what you want to live with. And
right.
When a man's looking at a transvestite and he's looking at, you know, someone who, not a transvestite, someone who's trans, you know, who's a transsexual,
mm-hmm.
you know, transvestite just dresses up. But these are men who look like women, you know, this is what they're looking at, the porno they're looking at. And so I've seen some of these pictures, and these men are more beautiful than many women I've seen. You know,
mm-hmm.
they really look extremely feminine. And there's nothing masculine about them. You know, these are the kinds of, you know, people that they have these sexual fantasies for. And they do look so beautiful, but the point is they still have a penis.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, I don't care how you dress it up. And I don't care if you put a dress on it or you put a wig on it or put breasts on it. You know, you still have a penis, and a penis is a penis. I mean, if a man truly was just interested in beautiful women, he would be looking at female porn, not porn that has a penis on it. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with him.
So,
I completely agree with it. With what I know personally and with what I know the women I've worked with, I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think any time a man has to fantasize about a penis to have sex with a woman, that's a problem. I mean, I'm not saying people don't have fantasies, but not usually of the same sex, and especially when it comes to men. When men, you know, I had a very nice man write me a letter the other day, and he said to me, Bonnie, I have really tried so hard to be a wonderful husband to my wife. You know, she's the most wonderful woman. I mean, he couldn't say one bad thing about her. He really said she's the best wife any man could ask for. He said, and, you know, I never wanted to hurt her. You know, I am gay. I've been living a gay side life for, you know, a number of years. And he said, because I never wanted to hurt her, you know, I would make love to her. And he said, I really focused on pleasing her because I never wanted her to feel, you know, that she's with a gay man. And he said, I really did a great job at, you know, pretending. She never suspected. And so sexuality for men, I mean, it's possible at any point, you know, for a lot of, you know, gay men. And most of them don't care about it, don't want to do it. But there are those who really go to extremes to try to fool their wives and will have sex with them. And sometimes even good sex with them. So, you know, but the bottom line is, do you want to be with a man who has to fantasize about a man to be with you? And that's, I think, what the bottom line is. What are you willing to live with? You know, it's kind of funny because before the show came on and Misty and I were talking, we were having a very big laugh on what can you live with? You know, I think that has to be one of our topics for our shows. You know,
it
each week up with what can you live with? You know, how far are you willing to go? Because in our experiences, we see women who are willing to live with the most unusual things. And kind of like I was saying to Misty, my sister came up with this. If you were going with a guy and you really liked him and it was the first time that you were going to make love with him after being with him for, you know, a couple months or a few weeks, whatever it is, and you're in an intimate setting and he pulls down his pants, you're taking off your clothes and he's wearing a diaper, would you have sex with him? So that was, not as a sexual thing, but because he was incontinent.
Oh, now that's different. There's two different things there. I think if there's a medical issue, I think that's something that should probably be discussed before you are having sex. But now if it's a fantasy type issue, I think it's a whole different ball game. In my opinion.
No, I think it's a different ballgame, too, because, you know, one is a medical purpose and the other is a fantasy. Mm-hmm. But then we've worked with women who had that as their fantasy. I mean, their husbands had that fantasy and the women still stayed with them. And I just never quite understood it, you know, that a man has to, you know, perform sex while he has a diaper on and he's being fed a bottle. Now, once again, I try not to make judgment on anything. You know, I mean, it's hard not to make some kind of judgment. I mean, I do think that's very bizarre, and it wouldn't be the kind of thing that I would ever want to have to be involved with. But if a woman isn't uncomfortable with it, it doesn't bother her, you know, I guess it's all what can you live with?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I could live with that at all. Could you?
No, I wouldn't want to entertain that idea. However, like you said, there's women out there that do, they're okay with that. And, I mean, that's where it goes, you know, if you're not hurting anyone, you're not harming anyone, and you have consensual adults, you know, that's where it becomes okay. You know, I think each couple has to define their own definition of what they're willing and what they find desirable.
I know. I mean, there are so many things, and I've studied sexuality for so many years now, and there's still so many things I just don't understand. And I'm not trying to be judgmental. But, you know, it's like I had a woman, I have another show on earlier in the evening for authors who belongs to my book co-op. And this woman is a very lovely woman. You know, she's in her 50s and she lives in California. And she writes books that are under the classification of erotica. And she does quite well with them. And, you know, the books that she writes about are about primarily paddling clubs, which I really wasn't that familiar with before her books. I mean, I know it goes on, but I didn't know they actually have, you know, clubs and scenes for it. Are you familiar with that?
I have heard of it. I didn't know there were clubs for it. But, yes, I'm aware of that. I had a client, had clients before that have dealt with that, but I was not aware of the clubs.
Yeah, they actually have clubs because, you know, she runs one of them, you know, and she said they're very nice. All the people who come are very respectable. There's nothing really kinky about it. You know, nobody, you don't have to participate. You know, some men come and their wives know they're coming there, but, you know, they let them go because they're not interested in that scene, but they don't know that their husbands, you know, are, so they don't mind if they go. And she said, you know, in our particular kind of group, you know, nobody's allowed to hurt somebody else. You know, it's paddling, and, you know, you get hit with a paddle, but you have to do it lightly because they're not into hurting people. And once again, I'm not judging. I just don't think I'll ever understand it, where you equate getting hit with sex.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can explain it to me, Misty.
Well, I'm going to explain it from a book level because I don't understand it either.
Okay.
But from what I've read, you know, some people do equate pain with sex, and they equate that with being enjoyable. Now, why they've done that, I don't know. But, you know, you've got people, especially teenagers, for example, that are self-harmers. Like, for example, they will cut themselves until they bleed, and they will explain that as a form of release. So at the time, it doesn't hurt them. I mean, they're not doing it for, you know, like 99% of self-harmers are not doing that to kill themselves, to, you know, like cut themselves, but it's just to release, and they say they don't feel it. And then when they cut, they feel, and it just is like this huge release for them. So I'm assuming, and this is a complete assumption, that for some reason, some people equate that pain as some form of release. And then, you know, sex, of course, can be a form of release, and somehow they've married the two together. I don't understand it very well. I just understand it from a point of reading it. But from what
really,
I gather, that's how I understand it. It's just a form of release. It's enjoyable and excitable to them.
You know, and I had this woman on my show several times now, my author's book show, and, you know, I try to be really nice about it, but, you know, I try to probe a little more because I'm trying to understand where people equate being hit with getting sexually aroused. I mean, I've read a lot about it, and I understand all the different things they do. I still don't in my mind, and, like, she tried to explain it to me that when you saw Clark Kent and Lois Lane or Jimmy Olsen from the old Superman series get tied up together, that some people find that, you know, that bond, kind of bondage, is sexually arousing. Now, I just never kind of equated the two of them together, but I know there are a lot of people who are into that.
Hmm. That's interesting.
I mean, I'll never quite look at Superman the same.
I won't either now. Thank you.
And I never knew it was sexually oriented because they're tied up together in a bind. But
mm-hmm.
Those are the things about sex. And once again, I don't understand them, and I'm not even judging them. But
right.
I don't want any woman to ever have to feel that if she's not comfortable with something sexually, that she has to feel compelled to do it. Because
exactly.
A lot of women who write to me feel that they're failures in their marriage because they couldn't live up to their husband's abnormal sexual, you know, expectations or experiences that they want to have. And I always feel so bad for them because I always feel that sex is such a personal thing. And it should be a thing of love and enjoyment and passion. And, if not even love, then at least, you know, some kind of emotional passion there. But, you know, when their husbands expect them to do things like, for instance, use toys on them anally, you know, or, you know, use all kinds of other things, and they tell me, and I'm not comfortable with it, or they want to see them have sex with another man, and they want to be a voyeur and watch or participate with another man. I mean, I've had a number of women who've told me they've tried it just to try to keep their marriage from ending or keep their husbands happy, but it's not something that they ever wanted to do, but they went along with it you know, so their husbands wouldn't get angry. And I think to myself, what do you have to really go through to keep your husband happy? What are you willing to give up? You know, your sense of sanity, do you have to sit and think about this all the time? How do you wipe these kind of images out of your mind? So, I mean, I feel it's really sad when women have to do things that they don't want to do. How do you feel about that, Misty?
I think sex should be consensual on both parts. It should be something that both enjoy. And without placing judgment, whatever that is, whatever they decide to do as a couple, as long as it's legal, I mean, you know, within age and, you know, they're able to consent to have sex. I think it's okay as long as it's consensual. It's between that couple, it's private, it's their bedroom. Now, when you start asking someone to do something they're not comfortable with, I think it's just pushing that person too far. And as a partner, I would hope that partner would back up and not go there. But, you know, we hear about this happening all the time, and a lot of times the straight wife is accused of being a stick in the mud or not being adventurous or whatever in the bedroom when it entails things like wanting to bring in an extra couple, wanting to bring in a partner, oftentimes a male partner. Sometimes they'll start with a female to sort of ease into the male partner. And rarely have I heard from the partner that this is work. Usually it's disastrous. And I know there's couples out there that get into swinging. That's fine if that's what they want to do. But I think it needs to be consensual for both, not one pushing the other one into it. And I just think it's just a setup for disaster if a person's pushed into something they don't want to do and they give into it. Usually that's not going to work out too well.
Well, talking about, you know, feeling comfortable and, you know, making decisions on what you're doing sexually, I just wanted to talk for a few minutes also about the segment that was on ABC News. It was on Friday night, and I don't know how many people got to see this segment, and one of our support group members, Wanda, sent it to me, so she was quite shocked. And Maggie, who also is part of our group, you know, she sent me the full version from ABC. So if anybody would like me to send you the link to the segment, just write to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you the segment. I sent it out to our support group members tonight, just a piece of the segment, and it was called, "What Would You Do If You Saw a Man Cheating on His Wife with Another Man?" It's part of this show called "What Would You Do?" And the choices are, would you tell the woman that her husband was cheating on her with a man, or do nothing because it's none of your business? So I think this is like a really interesting question, because we talk about it a lot in our support chat. And, you know, what would you do if you find out that your gay husband's dating another woman? Would you tell her? Would you let her know? Or would you just keep quiet and know that someday she'll find out and you don't want to be responsible for, you know, creating waves, you know, with your ex-husband? So I was really kind of surprised, because they have a vote on it and you can go vote. And earlier today, I think the people who were saying, yes, she should know, were really, you know, less, more in the minority, and no, it's none of my business, was kind of winning out. But, you know, I did send this out to a lot of people, so hopefully, you know, all these increased votes and yes, she should know, increased because, you know, people were supporting that point of view that were part of our support group. But what do you think on that end? What would you do, Misty, if you knew a woman who was married and they show her, you know, going to the bathroom and, you know, her husband's lover sitting at the bar overwatching them as they're sitting at their table eating and he's looking miserable. And as soon as she goes to the bathroom, he grabs the guy and they start kissing in public. And then the married guy is, like, pushing him away because, you know, he doesn't want his wife to find out.
Mm-hmm.
So in a case like that, what do you do?
Well, normally I think it's none of my business to pry into someone's business. However, having experienced this before in my past, you know, having a now an ex-husband that was going out with numerous men, it would have been great if someone, and I can understand not getting involved in someone's personal life because that's a very tricky thing. But it would have been great, I think, if I would have got some anonymous tips. So as far as anonymously, if I could alert that person, I would. And the reason I would be more for health safeguards because I've worked with a lot of women that have, you know, been exposed to HIV, hepatitis, mm-hmm. all sorts of things. And I know some people would be appalled by me saying that, but if I could tip off a person anonymously, I would in regards to the health safeguards. But in terms of other reasons, I'm sorry to hear
one reason, like physically, like you're saying, Misty, say they won't get all kinds of physical sexually transmitted diseases, but also because of their emotional state of mind, which we all know is straight wives where it's going to end up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he's going to treat a different wife better than he treated us when he's gay to start with. Would you
exactly.
say that?
And you got to be careful, I think, when you try to alert someone. I mean, what, you know, is the marriage already crumbling? What kind of emotional state is that woman in? You know, is she in a state to where if you tell her something like this, it may just push her off the edge? You know, so, I mean, I think a lot of factors play into it. So that's why I would stick with, you know, if I could do it anonymously, I definitely feel like I would owe someone that from a health standpoint of view, you know, to protect their health. In terms of what she's going to go through mentally and emotionally, wow, it's going to be rough. It's going to be really rough.
Now, it's going to be rough if she marries him and stays with him. Then she has to go through
exactly.
the experience of Weiland, right?
I'm not justifying him staying there whatsoever. I'm just saying at the bottom of the tip, I would put some support help, you know, here's where you can go for support. So, because it's not easy to find support out there, and we know that. And, you know, sometimes, like I'll give myself as an example, you know, 10 years into my marriage, I knew it was a crazy mess, and I knew he was gay. I just really was just trying to deny everything. So I was already a mess. I knew what was going on for the most part. I didn't know all of it. I didn't know near. I knew, like, the tip of the iceberg. But it wouldn't have pushed me over the edge. I don't know if it would have made me divorce any faster because it took me in my own time to get where I needed to be.
Yeah, one of the issues I'm going to address in my next newsletter, you know, on this subject, you know, since the subject did come up about, you know, should you tell the woman about her husband, you know, another man, I think for women, you know, because we do have women who have husbands who have multiple marriages. It's upsetting to them, and I can't blame
them. It is.
You know, it's even worse than,
you
don't get married.
You question what you know even more when that happens. It's terrible.
Right? You know, you start wondering, why is he marrying another? You know, and a lot of women are so confused. But, and, you know, then people say, well, you know, it's not fair that, and I've had women say this to me, it's not my business to out him. You know, by telling the next woman about it. But I say it's not a matter of outing him, it's a matter of informing her. Because I believe that a woman has that right to know. And, of course, the problem is that women are just afraid to do it because, you know, they say, well, she's not going to believe me, my husband's going to tell her that I'm crazy. And you know what? That's probably true. He probably will say you're crazy. And that she doesn't know what she's talking about. But once you put the seed of doubt and you plant it, you put the idea in her head that, you know, something's wrong in the marriage, don't start feeling like it's you, it's because you married a gay man, then that could save her sanity years down the line. I think as straight wives, we really owe that to other women, but I can see, like you say, how, you know, people can be afraid of that kind of confrontation. However, I'm not. So I always tell women you can feel safe in, you know, having me do that job for you.
Mm-hmm.
Get me the information.
So you're the go-to person for that.
Oh, absolutely. I would have no hesitancy, and I haven't. I've done it for a number of women. I wouldn't say a lot, but maybe for 15 or 16 women in the last year or two. You know, I send copies of my book to the women that they give me their names, that their husbands are remarrying or dating or have already married, with a note in there, you know, please read this if you think you need help, you know, just call me. And,
well, have you gotten any responses from those?
I had 3 responses out of 15 or 16. I was a little disappointed, but I guess it's better than nothing. But
mm-hmm.
I still feel that even if they didn't get in touch with me, the fact that they now know that it's something for them to look at, you know,
mm-hmm.
things aren't going right in the marriage, that maybe this is why they aren't.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully it'll do some good. Yeah, I'm a big believer in telling. And like
mm-hmm.
I say, not outing your husband, but informing his future, you know, well, at that point, victim. Because if the man gets married and it's not working out and he knows he's gay and he has to do this again and again, then he's victimizing women. There's no other way to put it. First time around, if you say to the guy he didn't know himself, he didn't know what he was. But if you're his wife and you knew what he was, and you know darn well he knows the next woman he's marrying, he knows what he is.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. You know, I didn't have to deal with that. And the women that I work with that do have to deal with that, it adds so much more complication to an already complicated situation. It's just horrible.
Mm-hmm.
What it adds, the doubt, the you know, the woman just doubting herself even more, because you know we doubt ourselves enough when we're going through that. You know, is he really gay? And then we feel guilty for thinking that our exes or husbands are gay, you know, and then when they remarry again, once you finally get the courage to divorce and they get up and they marry again, then that ex-wife goes through that same process, that grieving process all over again. Well, was I right? Was he really gay? Did I really throw something good away? You know,
uh-huh.
when deep down she knows that he was gay, but it's just really hard to complete. It interrupts her healing process. I'll put it like that. It just really... I'm not saying a woman can't heal from it. You can. I believe you can heal from anything. But it can interrupt the healing process when that happens.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think there's so much to be said about the healing process. And for those women who read my newsletter from last week, I had probably more response from that particular newsletter than any newsletter I've ever put out. And
wow.
And that newsletter, you know, I really... You know, I was very upfront and honest about all my own weaknesses and vulnerabilities. And, you know, I think, and I took a calculated risk. I also had a number of requests from women to be removed from the mailing list, and I knew that would happen too.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I had to take that calculated risk to let women know that if you're ever really going to find true happiness in your own life, you know, where it really begins is from within you. And I believe that in my heart that most of our women who go into these marriages go in filled with hopes and filled with dreams that these marriages are going to work. And I really believe in my heart they do not know that their husbands are gay. I mean, these men don't even know they're gay. But I do believe there's a prototype of a woman that these men are looking for, because they themselves are struggling within themselves. So they're looking for someone who's understanding, nurturing, a helper, someone who can guide them through this, who won't be too angry if it doesn't work out. And I think that a lot of our women going into these marriages are what I call broken women. A lot of us come from homes where there wasn't a lot of stability. You know, we could have had parents who were alcoholics or drug addicts, workaholics, whatever the case is. There was domestic violence in the home. You know, a whole gamut of things. And this is what, you know, life seemed like it was going to be to us. So if we walked into another situation that wasn't perfect, it was still better than what we were living in. And I think so many of us felt that we failed as children to our parents, that we thought that if a man comes to us and wants to marry us and take us away from that and tell us that he loves us, and no matter what, he's going to love us, that, you know, we run to that man as a kind of safety net without really thinking about who he really is or what he really represents inside himself. You know, we're just happy to find someone who can love us unconditionally, or so it seems at the beginning. So, you know, like I say, I certainly come from a broken home. I've been a broken woman for many years. I work every single day at building my self-esteem. And even though I certainly feel a lot better about myself now than I did 30 or 40 years ago, it's still a constant battle, and, you know, I'm always aware of it, and I'm always trying to do more for me. And I'm at the point in my life now where I made that decision that I am going to do more for me, and that's my goal for this upcoming year, because ever since I made that decision, I really feel better, you know, because I feel stronger, and I realize I can make it on my own. And, you know, most people who know me know I've been in a long-term relationship for 18 years now with a straight man who's really, you know, my soulmate, and is a wonderful man. But we did have a few issues over the holiday time, and, you know, it was very heartbreaking for me. I took a break from him. I took a calculated risk that that break may be a permanent break, but, you know, I went back after we resolved the issue. But I was able to resolve it because I wasn't needy anymore, that I didn't need to depend on a man to make me happy, that I was able to take that risk and say, either this relationship has to get back on track and it has to meet my needs and we can't be distracted on the way, or I don't want to be in it. And as hard as that was to say, you know, first to myself and then to him, I really meant it. I felt that I'm not going to settle for anything in a relationship that isn't the best for me. And if I can't feel great about waking up every day with a man who, you know, is supposed to love me and feel great by the time I go to bed at night, even greater, then there's something that's missing. And, you know, sometimes I think relationships go off track. But I'd like women to know that the only difference is that when you're with a straight man who's a wonderful straight man, then your relationship can get back on track. Because you have a track record to start with. You know, I think in life that stuff happens. You know, circumstances sometimes are beyond our control. So stuff will happen. But, you know, when you're with a straight man who really loves you, he's going to look to fix it, not make it more broken and break it further, because he doesn't know how to fix it or want to fix it. And so I think that's so much the difference between being with someone who's straight versus being someone who's gay. But yet, our women just keep trying to fix up these marriages with gay men, hoping against hope that something's going to miraculously change. Their husbands are going to come to their senses and realize that, you know, maybe gay can change. So I feel really bad, you know, but that's why I say I'm really devoting this year for me to build me up so that I never have to feel that kind of pain again. You know, things never worked out again for my boyfriend. I was willing, you know, to accept it. And life would go on. And you know what? I would probably open up my heart again and learn to love again with someone, because that's what I am.
Right.
That, you know, I can't let anything destroy me or any one person destroy me.
Exactly.
And I think that's what we have to really build up to in ourselves, that we're strong enough that we can overcome any kind of relationship, and that if it's not working for us, not even if it's a bad one, but it's just not working for us. You know, it wasn't a terrible, it was still, you know, we had some differences and we were able to fix them. And it wasn't like there was a bad guy and a good guy here. We're both still great. But, you know, the point is that there were issues that we needed to resolve, but he worked on resolving them because his relationship with me meant enough to him that he didn't want to leave.
Exactly. That's the key. That's the key. It meant enough to him. It meant enough to you to know that it could be better, and it meant enough to him to be willing to change things and help take it to a new level.
Right. And that's the whole thing, what it's about, is that I was in myself. You know, for years I used to think, Misty, if anything happened to him, I wouldn't want to go on living. You know, he's my whole source of happiness. He inspires me. I'm madly in love with him. You know, this man has been, you know, my hero for all these years, for nearly two decades. But everything changed this past year. And not that I love him any less. I don't. But I just love myself more. I think that's what it comes down to. I don't love him less. I love me more. And I'm really determined to work on my happiness this year so that no matter what happens in life, I'm still going to be happy.
Right.
And don't you think that's really the key?
I think it is. I think we really have to look within for our happiness. Now, someone on the outs can compliment our happiness, like Richard can compliment your happiness, but we really got to look within to find
exactly. By the way, we have a caller who's calling in. Let's see who it is. Hello, this is Bonnie and Misty. Who's calling?
Yeah, hi. This is Chris Cagliardi, host of Youth Worldview on Blog Talk Radio. How are you ladies this evening?
Good. How are you?
Good. I was listening about relationships and appreciation and everything, and I can understand it's not an easy thing to deal with, even in the LGBTQ community. It's not easy, and it's very hard to be accepted and have the relationship that is out there. And everybody, but the times are changing, and a lot of people are accepting people for who they are, not because of their preferences, but because of the heart. In my faith of Buddhism, we're taught that it's the heart that matters. It's the heart that matters, because if you have a very strong high life condition, and if you have a positive heart that has love for that person no matter who they are, you can actually, they will accept you for no matter what. And is that heart, it's the heart, and it goes back to the heart that matters the most. And you can, they don't give up on you, and you don't give up on them. And before I go, I do have a breaking news alert if y'all want to know that the New York Giants are heading to the Super Bowl. They defeated the San Francisco 49ers 20-17. Great epic battle. That was an ultimate epic battle, and now it's New England versus New York, so it's going to be an all-out showdown for sure
in
Indianapolis. Yep, New York, New England. Yes, I'm in New Jersey.
Well, I'm in Philadelphia.
I kind of felt bad for you guys. I mean, you guys put up a valiant battle in the Eagles there, and it really was an awesome battle. So well fought and well played this year in the NFL season. I was in Philadelphia years ago.
Yeah, well, I'm a very big Yankees fan, Chris.
Hey, go on now. Me too. So big up to all. Big up to everybody.
There's a statue standing in my living room. Well, 6 foot.
All right now. So, but that's really what I wanted to say. It's the heart that matters in the relationship. Even if you're married and if they can't come out, then you don't have to, they should not turn the you away or whatever. You should be embraced in everything. And that's what I think is really serious. I mean, we need to have the heart of compassion and more, and truly be great disciples and really love each other very much, no matter what our preference is. So I just wanted to give my thought in.
Well, thank you, Chris. You know, we're very pro-gay on this show. We're just not pro-gay marriage with women. We're pro-gay marriage with gay people. But, you know, it's just a heartbreaking situation when people are trying to live a life that aren't authentic lives for them. You know, it's very hard for the gay man to keep living a lie, and it's hard for his wife to not know why her marriage is doomed. You know, it's just
a
reality. But I think, like you say, if people were more open to homosexuality and not judging it, accepting it, and let gay people have the same rights that everybody else has.
Exactly. Everybody should have the universal rights to anything and obligations and everything that they deserve. And that's what I'm fighting for, rights for everybody, not just for the LGBT community, but the physically and mentally challenged in the community. I'm
absolutely
an advocate, and I believe that everybody should be given the same fundamental rights as any human being on this earth. So I am not going to give up on this issue, on rights and equality, because everybody is members of the human family.
Well, thank you for fighting for all of us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for your hard work. We appreciate it.
You are welcome, and please know that if you ever want to check me out, I'm on blogtalkradio.com/ Jersey Justice, numerical number 29.
29?
Yes,
like
Jersey Justice 29. Yes, blogtalkradio.com.
All right, I'll be checking you out, Chris. I really appreciate it. And
you're quite welcome.
Join us again
tonight. Have a great night, guys.
All right. Thank
you.
Good night. Well, that was a nice way to end our show.
It was.
I'm always glad when I hear people who really want the best for everybody, because that's what we want. We want a quality of life for everyone. We want to make sure that, you know, everybody has the best quality of life. You know, people, I think, you know, when you talk a little bit about, you know, the therapist Maslow and what he said, you know, there's a chain of needs that we all have, but I think all of us want to be loved and not have to, you know, live under pressure.
And the hierarchy of needs, absolutely. Everyone needs love.
I know. And I think that, you know, people have to go through such hurt over love. It never makes sense to me. I'm never going to get it, Misty.
I won't
either. This is going to be on my list of stuff I'm never going to get. And there's a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, that's one of mine too. Everyone, I don't have to agree with everyone, nor will I ever in this lifetime agree with everyone, nor would everyone agree with me, but that makes all of us unique. However, in the end, everyone deserves basic human rights. Everyone.
Hmm. Well, next week we may have our wonderful guest, Angela Pizzuto, on.
Mm-hmm.
And Angela is a therapist in Florida for gay men.
Mm-hmm.
And also for women, but he always gives us this great understanding and insight
mm-hmm.
into why gay men act the way they do. You know, and those who try to get through life being straight who aren't.
Right.
So hopefully he'll be with us next week. And we want to wish all of our listeners a wonderful week. I do want to also mention before we hang up, I'm really excited that we're starting a United Kingdom support chat. So for our ladies who are in the United Kingdom, you know, it's always been a challenge for you to try to come to our chats because there's a five-hour difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so starting in mid-February on Sundays at 9 o'clock your time, I'll be starting our UK chat, and Misty will be joining us whenever she's available. But if you're interested in joining that chat, please write to me at bondk@aol.com. Whether you're in the UK or in Ireland, we'll have women from both countries that are with us. So please feel free to let me know if you'd be interested in joining us.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a whole bunch of women who are going to be joining us on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So the more support spreads, the better it is.
Absolutely.
So I hope everybody has a wonderful week. And Misty, I'll let you say goodnight for both of us.
Good night and love to all.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.